I recently attended the funeral of my uncle. And funerals aren't something that we typically enjoy. Sometimes it can be pretty sad. And at other times, when an individual has been sick or they've been battling a disease for a long time, the funeral might come as a relief that the person isn't suffering anymore. But even so, funerals still are not easy. And at my uncle's funeral, one of his close friends got up to say a few words. And as he did, he chose to read a poem as part of his eulogy. And when he read this poem, it got me to thinking. So I want to share that poem with you today. And then I have some points for you and I from the poem that I'm going to read. But this poem is titled, The Dash. And some of you may have heard it before. If not, I would encourage you to look this poem up and read through it and use it in your Bible study. And you'll see more about that as we go through the message. But this poem is titled The Dash, and it's written by Linda Ellis. It's not very long, so I'll read the poem in its entirety. It says, I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of birth and spoke the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between the years. For that dash represents all the time that they spent alive on earth. And now only those who loved them know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that can still be rearranged. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real and always try to understand the way other people feel and be less quick to anger and show appreciation more and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering this special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? And I'm sure we've all been to a cemetery at one point. I don't spend a lot of time there. But when we go to a graveside service, as we did with my uncle's funeral, I oftentimes, as we're walking through, I'll take a look at the headstones as we're walking through the cemetery, looking at the names that are listed, the dates that are listed, the date the individual was born, and the date that individual died. Those dates do oftentimes have a dash between them. And just like the poem mentioned, that dash, that period between their birth and their death, represents that individual's life. And sometimes I wonder, what was that person like? Or what was their life like? Some of them lived a long life. What did they do? How big was their family? Some of them died pretty young. Did they get a chance to finish school? Did they get a chance to get married? Did they have a family of their own? And these questions can go on and on and on. We might ask, what was their dash like? And we can ask ourselves the same question. What is our dash like? And would you and I be pleased by how people talk about how we spent our dash? Another way to look at this dash might be described as our legacy that we leave behind. A couple of definitions for legacy The first one is the amount of money or property left to someone in a will or an inheritance. But this second definition has more meaning from this poem and what we're going to talk about today. And it's the long-lasting impact of particular events or actions that took place in the past or things that happen in a person's life. Some synonyms for legacy might include heritage, principles, standards, or values. But in the context of the poem that I read and the legacy that you and I might leave behind, we need to think about it in terms of the values or the principles or the standards that are depicted in how we live our lives. While our physical life and our physical legacy is important, our spiritual life and our spiritual legacy is far more important to you and I. What we leave to our children, or what we leave to those that remain after our physical life is over, should be a life that was lived as an example of what godly values and principles and standards look like. In Proverbs chapter 13, if you would, we'll look here where we see that it is important for us to leave a legacy, or leave an inheritance, if you will. Proverbs 13, verse 22. It says, "A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous." We're admonished here to leave an inheritance or a legacy to our children or to those that come behind us, and even to our grandchildren. That inheritance can be something that's more than just money or physical things. We can certainly set an example of obedience and faithfulness to our children and even to our children's children. We won't turn there, but you can read back in Deuteronomy in more than one place, but in chapter 12, verse 28, where they been given some instructions on how to do things, and it says, "It will be well with you if you do these things, if you practice these things." We are writing our story. We're writing our legacy right now. And some of us have more pages written than others. What's your story going to look like? What will my story look like? And as I mentioned earlier, will that story that we're writing be something we would be proud of? Or would our story be disappointing? Hebrews 11, which is often referred to as the faith chapter, gives us many stories or many legacies to read. And will our stories be added to these stories in the future? And if so, how will our story, how will our legacy compare to what we read in Hebrews 11. Those individuals did some pretty amazing things, and they showed tremendous faith in following and obeying God. So the question for us is, can we do the same? And if so, how can we do that? In the time remaining today, I want to look at some points, and I have 6 points that we can use to work on these points that will help ensure that we leave a positive legacy to those that come behind us. These points may not elevate our legacy to that of the individuals in Hebrews 11, but maybe they will result in us leaving behind a positive legacy. We put these points into practice, then our dash might be a little bit more meaningful. And our dash might be more impactful to those coming behind us. So 6 points that we can use to improve our dash. The first point I have is live. Live each day like it's our last. You would turn to James chapter 4. Live each day like it's our last. You know, we don't know how many days we have left. And there's an old saying that goes, why do today what you can put off till tomorrow? That's not how we want to practice this point. We want to live each day like it's our last day. James chapter 4. We'll start in verse 13. It says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go to such and such a city, we'll spend a year there, we'll buy and sell, and we'll make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time, and then it vanishes away. Instead of being focused on the future and the things that we would like to do, which is important to have goals, we need to recognize that this physical life is short and that we need to make sure we take care of the important things each and every day. Those important things we recognize as being obedient to God and His way of life. The only future thing that is of any real value to us is that of God's kingdom. And to make sure that we're doing each day, every day, our part to ensure that we become a part of that kingdom. Let's turn back to Psalm chapter 89 for another couple verses on this idea of our physical lives being temporary. Psalm chapter 89. We'll start in verse 47. It says, remember how short my time is. For what futility have you created all the children of men? What man can live and not see death? Can he deliver his life from the power of the grave? Remember how short our lives are. For us, living each day like it's our last, in terms of making the preparations we need to make in preparing ourselves for God's kingdom. Don't put off till tomorrow the things that we need to be doing today, such as studying and maintaining a close relationship with God. We must take advantage of the time that we have, and we know that none of us are going to be guaranteed tomorrow. So live each day like it's our last. The second point is to focus. Make sure our focus is where it should be. And our focus should be on God's truth, and our focus should be on our spiritual future. And we should value that tremendously. Turn to Colossians chapter 3, if you will. And you might leave a marker here. We'll come back a couple more times to Colossians chapter 3. But for now, we're going to start in verse 1. If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. If we're to be like Jesus Christ, we're to look to higher things. Our focus should be on heavenly things, or on God's way of life and on His truth. And we shouldn't get caught up focusing on the things of this earth. And that's not to say that we neglect our jobs or we neglect providing for our families. And there's nothing wrong with being successful, physically speaking, but our real focus must be on being successful spiritually. Turn back to Matthew chapter 6 for another couple verses on this point. Matthew chapter 6. And we'll break into the thought here in verse 19, or verse, starting in verse 19. Says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, your heart will be also. We must truly value, and we must treasure what God has placed before us, what He's given us, the opportunity that we have. And we will tend to focus more on those things that we value in such a way. And we'll skip down to verse 33, same chapter, Matthew chapter 6. It says, "But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will take care of its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble." So we see here that our focus, our priority, should be first of all on seeking God's kingdom and following His way of life. That's where our focus and our efforts should be placed. And if God's way is our priority and we're seeking His way, then we're told there that God will take care of the rest of our needs. God will take care of us. We shouldn't worry about that. The third point that I have is kindness. Show kindness to others. And as we were reading that poem, or if you go back and read that poem again, you'll see these points pointed out toward the end of it, and parts of the fruit of the Spirit mentioned in the poem if you practice some of these things. This third point, kindness. And I want to read a quick quote from Enlightio.com, whatever that is. But I Googled some stuff on kindness, so I want to give credit for what I'm about to read to you. This is an article on what is the difference between kindness and compassion. Kindness is one of the most important qualities a person can have. It's defined as being generous, helpful, and friendly. Kindness is a trait that's often seen in people who are considered good people. Kind people often go out of their way to help others, even if they're not asked to do so. They are always willing to lend a hand, and they never hesitate to put others first. The best thing about kindness is that it's a trait that can be learned. Anyone can become kinder by making an effort to be more generous and helpful to others. And it's also important to be friendly towards people, even those you don't know very well. When we're kind, we make the world a better place for everyone. It says, kindness is often considered a cornerstone of morality, and it's a virtue that's highly valued in many cultures. There are many reasons why kindness is considered so important. For one, it helps create positive relationships and build communities. Kindness also has the power to heal wounds and to make people feel loved and appreciated. It can also inspire others in turn to be kind, creating a cycle of compassion. Turn back to Colossians chapter 3 again. We'll read in verse 12, and in my Bible there's a heading above these verses talking about the character of the new man. But Colossians chapter 3, verse 12, "Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection." Part of our character as a future member of God's family should be that we're showing kindness, as well as the rest of the fruit of the Spirit we find in Galatians 5, but we're focusing in on this one of kindness right now. Showing kindness, as we read, involves putting other people first. Sometimes that can be hard to do. We want to take care of our needs and our wants first. but in showing kindness, we put other people first. The focus and attention comes away from ourselves and is redirected to those around us, to other people. The fourth point that I have is self-control, or slow to anger, as it was mentioned in the poem. Slow to anger. Let's turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1. And we'll read starting in verse 19. It says, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God." And I've heard it said before, and I've used it before, especially with our children. God has given us two ears and one mouth. Does this mean we need to listen twice as much as we talk? It's better to listen to someone or something and think about what we want to say, or think about how we respond to that, rather than just blurting out the first thing that comes to mind. And we as humans sometimes tend to do that. We speak before we think. And our actions, when we do this, our actions and our words can be very hurtful. If we lash out at someone without really thinking about what we say or what we do, it's like we took a knife and we stabbed that person. Our words can be like a knife. Once we stab the person, we pull the knife back, and we might apologize for what we've just said or what we've just done, but that doesn't take away the gaping hole or the wound that we've left from our hurtful words. Once the damage is done, it's hard to fix that, and it can be a very difficult healing process when we do that. Turn back to Proverbs chapter 16. We'll look at a couple verses back in Proverbs about this idea of self-control and being slow to anger. Proverbs 16 and verse 32 says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." It takes a lot of strength to exercise self-control. And to play on the theme from Winter Family Weekend, it takes a lot of strength and courage sometimes to exercise self-control. Flip back a couple pages to Proverbs chapter 14. Read another verse. Proverbs 14 and verse 29 says, "He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive," or short of spirit, as it says in my margin, "exalts folly." Wisdom and understanding will lead to exercising self-control. We learn what to say, and we learn what not to say, as well as when to say it or when not to say it. The fifth point that I have is thankfulness, or show appreciation. Turn back to Colossians chapter 3 again. Colossians chapter 3, and we'll read in verse 15. This is still under that heading of the character of the new man. "And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him." Again, this is more about that character that we should be developing or displaying as a future member of God's family. And having an understanding God's truth, with that understanding, should give us cause to be thankful. What else is there once we understand God's plan and what our ultimate goal is? It should cause us to really want to be showing appreciation for that. Let's turn back to Psalm chapter 100. We'll read a little bit more about this idea of thanksgiving and being thankful. Psalm 100. And in my Bible, this is labeled a Psalm of Thanksgiving. We'll start in verse 1. "Make a joyful shout to the Lord, all you lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before His presence with singing. Know that the Lord, He is God. It is He who has made us, and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. Enter into His gates with thanksgiving, and into His courts with praise. Be thankful to Him and bless His name. For the Lord is good, His mercy is everlasting, and His truth endures to all generations." If we stop and consider the plan of God and how magnificent that plan is, and that God has chosen each of us to be a part of that, we should overflow with thanksgiving and appreciation for what God has done, and for what He is doing for us, and better yet, what He will do for us. We might compare this to trying out for a sports team. In high school, junior high, whatever, we try out for a sports team, we go to the tryouts, we work hard, and then we eagerly wait for the list to be posted of those who made the team. And when the list goes up, everybody's crowded around the list, and they're running down the list of the names, and the excitement and anticipation builds as you go down the list. And then finally, there it is. Your name is on that list. You made it. At that point, you're extremely excited, and most likely you're very thankful that you made the team. So realizing that God has put our name on this list of possible future members of His family should give us cause to be excited and to be thankful for that opportunity. But we still have to put in the work. We have to do our part. But at least we have that opportunity. And the sixth and final point that I have is love. Show love like never before, as the poem stated. We might look at this as to love God and to love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. Turn to Matthew chapter 5. And this might be better stated, love God and love our neighbor like we've never loved before. Because for us, it's easy to love our family members. It's easy for us to love our spouses. But when we look at what we see here in Matthew chapter 5, sometimes this is not so easy. Matthew chapter 5, verse 43. Says, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and you shall hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for He makes His sun rise on the evil and on the good, and he sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? It says, we are to see others as God sees them, and to love them as God loves them. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's not normal behavior for us as human beings. This requires loving like we've never loved before. Turn over to Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37. Breaking into this, they had asked Jesus, which is the greatest commandment? But in verse 37, Jesus said to them, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and the great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And on these two commandments hang all the law and prophets. We love God first and foremost, and above all else. And we also are to love our neighbor as ourselves. And we're to put others first, which goes back to kindness that we were looking at a while ago. And to do this takes tremendous strength and character. And strength and character that comes from God. Strength and character that comes from being focused and from being close to God. In order to love God and to love our neighbor like we've never loved before, we have to have God's help to do that. Turn to John chapter 15. John chapter 15. This might illustrate to us the ultimate degree of loving like we've never loved before. John 15, we'll start in verse 12. It says, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. In verse 13, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. Christ commanded his disciples to love one another just as he had loved them. You know, even to the point of being willing to lay down their lives for one another. And we did read in Hebrews 11 about some individuals with some pretty good legacies. But if we are trying to be like someone else, if we want to walk in someone else's shoes, should we pick somebody out of Hebrews 11? Maybe we should. Maybe we could. And that's not a bad idea. But is there someone else that we might try to emulate? And I think we all know where I'm going with this question. And that answer is that we should be trying to be like Jesus Christ. You know, Jesus Christ set us the example. And if you read through the gospel accounts of Jesus Christ's life and his ministry, you read many, many examples of how he lived his life. How he could have practiced these points we've gone over today. How he treated other people. How he put other people first. And he gave us the ultimate example of how to live and how to follow him. And there are many that we can learn from of these lessons that are there for us. So I would encourage us to read through the gospel accounts with this in mind. What lessons we can learn from how he lived his life and what we can apply in ours. And as we reflect back on the 6 points that we've covered today, let's ask ourselves, How can we apply them in such a way as to mirror what Jesus Christ would do? Let's make sure that we live each day like it's our last day. Make sure our focus is on what is important. Focus on God's truth. And let's show kindness to others. Put others above ourselves. We must exercise self-control. And in all that we do, let's make sure that we show our thankfulness and our appreciation, especially to God for what He has done for us, and what He is doing, and what He will do for us. And finally, the culmination of these first 5 points results in showing love like we have not shown before, both to God and to our neighbors. If we practice these points, maybe our legacy, or maybe our dash, will be a truly meaningful one. So when your eulogy is being read, with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash?